New Jersey Senator Cory Booker broke with tradition today in testifying against a colleague in a confirmation hearing. I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. Alabama Senator Jeff Sessions is President-elect Donald Trump's nominee to serve as Attorney General. Sessions was both a federal prosecutor and state attorney general before becoming senator. I'm joined now by WHYY New Jersey reporter Joe Hernandez. Joe, thanks for joining us on NewsWorks Tonight.
Sure, Dave.
Is this uncharted territory?
Yeah, this is the first time a sitting U.S. senator has testified against another sitting U.S. senator who's up for a cabinet post. I should mention that when you see those Senate hearings on TV, the senators on that panel asking questions are in that committee, in this case, the Senate Judiciary Committee. Cory Booker is not in the Senate Judiciary Committee, so he basically came in as a character witness to testify against Sessions.
Of course, Booker is the junior senator from New Jersey. What did he have to say?
Well, he had about 5 minutes to speak, so he didn't say a ton, but he packed a lot in. And he started out with kind of a personal story about how the justice system worked for him when he was a kid. Booker is black, and he said he knew this judge in New Jersey, a white judge, who got interested in civil rights after the 1965 march across the Edmund Pettus Bridge in Selma, Alabama. Booker said this white judge came back to New Jersey to help, as a lawyer, help defend black families that were being denied housing, and that Booker's was one of those families.
I am literally sitting here because of people, marchers in Alabama and volunteer lawyers in New Jersey, who saw it as their affirmative duty to pursue justice, to fight discrimination, to stand up for those who are marginalized. But the march for justice in our country still continues. It is still urgent.
And so Booker said Jeff Sessions was not the right guy to be leading that charge.
Yeah, but Joe, by virtue of what specific complaints?
Well, Booker didn't give a ton of specifics, but he did criticize Sessions pretty strongly. He said Sessions wasn't a defender of the rights of women, of the LGBT community, and of immigrants, and that he didn't stand up for voting rights either. Booker also said he didn't think Sessions would continue what he called the national bipartisan movement toward criminal justice reform. And this has been a huge issue for Booker, both in Newark as mayor and nationally in the Senate.
Senator Sessions would not continue to lead this urgently needed change. The next attorney general must bring hope and healing to this country. And this demands a more courageous empathy than Senator Sessions' record demonstrates.
Now, Booker also made sure to acknowledge the need for law and order. He said probably no sitting senator has lived in such high crime neighborhoods as he has in Newark, but he said there can't be law and order without social justice as well.
Joe, did Booker substantiate why he took this unprecedented step?
Well, he said if he had to choose between keeping a Senate tradition and speaking his conscience, he would choose his conscience. Earlier this morning, I called up Ross Baker, who's a political science professor at Rutgers University, and he said the nomination very likely of Sessions hit home for Booker because Booker has been interested in these issues of law and criminal justice pretty much his whole career.
He's someone who really devoutly believes in civil rights. He's someone who's fought very hard to reform the criminal justice system, particularly sentencing procedures. There are many areas of the Attorney General's jurisdiction that impinge on things that Cory Booker cares about.
Baker said there's also room to be cynical about this speech, Dave. We know Cory Booker has national political ambitions. He was seen earlier this month in New Hampshire doing a local TV interview. And Baker said that 2020 may seem far away for most people, but for politicians considering a run for president, it's right around the corner.
Putting aside the danger that this precedent might set, much the way the Senate amended the so-called nuclear option, what happens with Sessions' nomination now?
Well, the confirmation hearing is over. Sessions' nomination will now go up for a vote before the full U.S. Senate. And he's got support from Republicans who have a majority in the Senate and even from some Democrats in red states. So he's expected to be approved.
Thanks, Joe.
Thank you, Dave.
WHYY New Jersey reporter Joe Hernandez on NewsWorks Tonight. Philadelphia's opiate Epidemic Task Force held its first meeting today. The group has a lot of work ahead of it. Drug deaths were triple the city's homicide rate last year. More from WHYY's Tom McDonald.
Although the final numbers for 2016 aren't complete because of medical testing that's pending, the number of drug overdoses will be around 900 in Philadelphia. Dr. Jeff Hom is a member of the task force trying to come up with ways to cut that number. He says it's just not about drugs being bought on the street.
That story really begins with prescription opioids. You may be most familiar with these medications known as Vicodin or Percocet or OxyContin. And what's important to know about these pain medications is that they're chemically similar to heroin. And because they're similar to heroin, they can be addictive and can cause overdoses.
Hom says part of the problem is doctors.
Over the last several years, healthcare providers across the country have been prescribing too many of these medications to too many people in too large quantities and in too high of doses.
Deputy Health Commissioner Roland Lamb says not enough people are receiving treatment for their addiction.
77% were male, 23% were female, about 51% of African Americans as far as the total number of people in treatment, which means that the white non-Hispanic persons who are addicted are being underrepresented.
Mayor Jim Kenney says it's time to do something to fight the rising death toll.
This is heroin addiction on steroids. It's beyond anything you can imagine, and we have a responsibility to our citizens to try to fix it. Now, if that means stopping doctors from doing what they're doing and getting treatment and getting place for people to live and recover, and that's what we have to do. It's our responsibility.
The task force has given itself 3 months to come up with a short list of recommendations and submitting them to the mayor for approval and implementation. I'm Tom McDonald, WHYY News.
Reports of hate crimes and bias in the Philadelphia area have risen sharply since the presidential election. As WHYY's Bobby Allen reports, the uptick has city civil rights officials on high alert.
Every year, the Philadelphia Commission on Human Relations gets around 30 reports of hate crimes. But in the 2 months since the November election, the commission has already surpassed that number, logging nearly 40 reports. Rue Landau leads the commission.
That is a strong increase from years past. We've never seen a few months like this.
She says Donald Trump's comments disparaging Muslims, Mexicans, and other groups have definitely fueled some of the acts.
Most of the people who will be in the White House are never, ever going to have to deal with the consequences of these negative acts or hateful speech. And we on the ground know that that's different.
There have been more swastikas, more instances of anti-gay and anti-Semitic speech, and an increase in incidents targeting Muslims, like a report of someone pulling off a woman's hijab.
One bias incident in a neighborhood, even if it doesn't rise to the level of a crime, puts fear in the lives of the victims and the entire community.
In another example, Landau says someone in South Philly installed a sign in their door calling their neighbor an illegal immigrant.
Just so happened the neighbors were not undocumented, but still feeling like they had the license to do this, to cause this harm to their neighbors, to cause that much fear in a neighborhood is significant.
Landau says bringing different groups together for dialogue, like she has with police officers and young people of color, for instance, really does pay off.
When people get to know each other as people and as individuals and stop painting each other with a wide brush, making generalization about groups, that we reduce hate, reduce community tension.
Meanwhile, calls to the commission's anonymous line are also on the rise. For WHYY News, I'm Bobby Allen.
Every indication is that Democratic Governor Tom Wolf will likely seek a second term in Pennsylvania in 2018, though it could be a crowded field. Let's make sense of it with John Misek, editorial and opinions editor for Penn Live and The Patriot News. John, welcome back to Newsworks Tonight.
Thanks, Dave. Happy New Year. Good to be here.
To you as well. Before we get to the players, let's make sense of the plays. What are the implications for Pennsylvania? Is it considered one of the vulnerable states in terms of the potential to turn parties?
Yeah, just the other week, Governing Magazine listed Democratic incumbent Governor Tom Wolf among 18 vulnerable incumbent governors nationwide. Three of them are Democrats. You know, he had a rough couple of years coming out of the gate with his first budget. Tide turned with strengthened Republican majorities in the state House and Senate. So, yeah, he's definitely up against it as he heads into re-election in 2018. And as you said, there's every indication that that's going to happen.
And there would then be repercussions for the 2020 redistricting.
Yes, there would indeed, but let's not get too far ahead of ourselves. I mean, what we know right now is that it looks like Pennsylvania, because of population laws, will lose two congressional seats. if Republicans retain control of the state House in 2018 and further strengthen their majorities and conceivably in the state Senate, you know, that will mean Republicans will wield a stronger hand in the once-a-decade reapportionment.
They say nothing succeeds like success. Tell us about this millionaire businessman with scant little political background, Republican State Senator Scott Wagner of York County.
He's a force of nature. If Pennsylvania has a Donald Trump, then Scott Wagner is definitely it. He made history a couple of years ago, winning a special election in a write-in campaign and then winning a full four-year term in his own right. Wagner has said that he will not seek re-election in 2018 when his seat comes up so that he can go all in for running for governor, a signal of his seriousness of intent on that score. He could have, you know, taken sort of the easy way out and see how things went in the Republican primary and still run for his Senate seat, but he's going all in. His rise has been one of the more meteoric in recent Pennsylvania political history. Last cycle at 14, he brought in two like-minded Republican senators with him. And then in this most recent cycle, he brought in three more. So he's assembled kind of his own little separate Scott Wagner caucus, if you will, in the state Senate.
Back up, he certainly comes with political acumen. Review how he won an initial write-in campaign.
I mean, that was just good old-fashioned, well, one, it was money, for one. He's, as you mentioned, he's bucks up, but it's also just sort of good old-fashioned elbow grease. You know, say what you want about his politics, say what you want about his pugnaciousness as a person. This is a guy who understands the art of retail politics, and he understands how to campaign, and he works as hard as anyone has ever seen.
Not so dogmatic. He's apparently moderate on at least some social issues, but on fiscal issues, not much compromise.
Has never met a tax that he didn't hate. But, yeah, I mean, on stuff like anti-discrimination and perhaps even on the minimum wage, he's willing to give a little bit. You know, the funny thing about Wagner is that, you know, for sort of all of his dragon guy reputation, when you sit with him one-on-one, he's difficult not to like as a person. He explains himself well, and he's got sort of his own sort of charm to him as well.
Has he ever met a union that he likes?
They probably have dartboards with Scott Wagner's face on it, particularly given this round of layoffs at the State Department of Labor and Industry just before the holidays.
So by dint of personality and deep pockets, is he the lead Republican challenger?
At the moment, yes, since nobody else is actually formally declared, though we did learn that a guy called Paul Mango, a businessman from Allegheny County, might be considering a run of his own so he could rival Wagner perhaps in the deep-pocketed sweepstakes. But right now, it kind of looks like he's sort of the lead horse. But as there are other Republicans are going to be getting into this thing as well.
Sobering, I'm sure, to Governor Wolf that the state went to Donald Trump. And like Hillary, Wolf is not a great force on the campaign trail.
He does not light up the room, say, like an Ed Rendell did in Democratic circles, but the governor has his own skills as a campaigner. I mean, the one thing we're going to have to keep in mind here, though, is that 2018 is still an awfully long way away. And historically, the party of the incumbent president takes a bit of a beating during the midterm elections, and, you know, we still have to see how Donald Trump's act is going to wear over the next, you know, say, 18 months or so, Dave. If the voters decide by 2018 that they're a little bit topped off on Donald Trump, that might not necessarily augur well for Scott Wagner.
John, thanks so much for joining us on NewsWorks Tonight.
Anytime, Dave.
John Micek, editorial and opinions editor for Penn Live and the Patriot News. Come Friday, the Penn Museum will host a performance of a music composition written specifically for the way sound bounces off the stone walls in its rotunda. From WHYY's Arts and Culture Desk, Peter Crimmins reports that the work was tailored for a space with an extreme echo effect.
The Museum of Archaeology and Anthropology at the University of Pennsylvania has a rotunda with 90-foot ceilings made completely of stone. While that's really good for showcasing sculptures from ancient China, it has terrible acoustics. There is a 6-second reverb. You want to know what a 6-second echo sounds like? Composer Scott Ordway turned that to his advantage.
Each measure will resound both with the measure that preceded it and the measure that follows it. So in some ways, each moment of the music is literally in dialogue with the past and the future, which resounds nicely in a museum that has 5,000 years of human history.
Ordway was commissioned by the museum and the American Composers Forum to create Tonight We Tell the Secrets of the World, a piece that uses long, drawn-out notes that linger in the air of this rotunda. Ordway worked with the museum curators to identify ancient texts in the museum's archive related to secrets. He focused on secrets about love, death, and God. For this piece, each member of the audience, expected to be about 150, receive a different piece of text, which they are expected to whisper when signaled. Nobody has the same text, so the audience will not be whispering in unison. Rather, they will create a quiet wall of unintelligible sound.
The sound is something which is beautiful for its own sake. The meaning comes from the one-to-one relationship between an audience member and one text.
Ordway plans to release a recording of Tonight We Tell the Secrets of the World, but it will lack the audience participation element, which he says is critical to get the full experience. I'm Peter Crimmins, WHYY News.
Thousands of people have been flocking to the 101st annual Pennsylvania Farm Show this week. Visitors slurp milkshakes, ducklings slide down slides, families camp out with their prized goats, cows, and pigs, and if you look closely, you'll see the event also plays host to a rarer breed, politicians. WITF's Katie Meyer reports that the farm show floor is prime politicking territory for Pennsylvania's state and federal lawmakers, and they take advantage of it.
Governor Tom Wolf pats a cow. U.S. Senator Bob Casey checks out a tractor. Congressman Glenn Thompson discusses the dairy industry. The agricultural exhibition is a great opportunity for politicians to get some one-on-one and some photo ops with the people responsible for one of Pennsylvania's biggest industries.
Agriculture is really important as a touchstone of American culture, but also as a centerpiece of our economy.
That's Wolf on a tour of the main floor. Dressed in khakis and loafers instead of his usual suit, he did his best to match the show's down-to-earth sensibilities.
I went by a Massey Ferguson tractor over here. I used to work on Massey Ferguson tractors, so I mean, it's really nostalgic for me. This is really interesting for me.
Wolf was joined by State Agriculture Secretary Russell Redding and Democratic Senator Bob Casey, who took note of the event's political value.
People will stop you and give you their opinion very directly. There's no filter, and my experience of most of the last 20 years visiting the farm show is that people are very direct, but they're also very polite, which isn't always the case in Washington.
One of those polite, direct people is Brian Beck with Long Acres Potato Farms in Clarion County. He says he appreciates that politicians turn out for the show, but he's often skeptical of whether they're taking feedback to heart.
I think our state government loves the thought of agriculture, and I think they are committed in theory.
In his mind, the state often hurts more than it helps.
We need less regulation, our taxes. It's hard for most farms in agriculture today in Pennsylvania are losing money. And what's frightening is we're losing our backbone in the state.
Beck was joined at his potato display by his daughter, Eva, who's adamant about going into the family business, among other things.
Do you want to be a potato farmer?
Yes.
Yes.
And a lineman.
A lineman?
She's interested in being maybe an electrical lineman.
That's amazing. So you got the goals. And how old are you?
10.
But according to a lot of people, like lifelong dairy farmer Dale Hoffman, kids like Eva aren't really the norm.
You had a grandfather or grandmother that had a farm or something, so the grandkids could go see it. They don't see that no more, so we've lost all those grassroots.
Hoffman attended a panel where around 24 farmers and industry stakeholders got a chance to air their grievances directly to lawmakers. He has around 900 cows at the Potter County farm he runs with his children and grandkids, and he points out the farm show can be a perfect place for farmers to let politicians and the general public know what they're up against in 2017. But Hoffman says even more important is getting politicians to see those challenges firsthand.
It's very important that you take them out to the farmers and walk them around and show them what you're doing.
One of those politicians that Hoffman has successfully gotten out to the farm is Republican Congressman Glenn Thompson, who hosted the farm show panel.
From listening, you know, we find out what the issues are, the concerns, the challenges.
Thompson serves on the House Agriculture Committee, and he says he takes a lot of the input from farmers directly back to Washington. It's a wide-ranging mix of ideas, but the farmers at the panel tended to agree on a couple major goals. Cutting regulations, like the clean water restrictions on runoff imposed by the Federal Environmental Protection Agency, and driving up sales of American-grown food, particularly dairy. Hoffman offers one solution.
We need food in America. Okay, we're importing a lot more than people realize. I hate to say that, but that's the truth. And the consumer does not know it. And like I said about you buy pants, shirts, or whatever, tells you where it's made, food should be the same way.
Back out on the main farm show floor, Brian Beck, the potato farmer, remains unconvinced state lawmakers will be able to walk the walk. But although food production can be political, he says, at the very least, it doesn't have to be partisan.
I don't think it matters what side of the political spectrum a person lies on. I don't feel that our Pennsylvania government quite gets what a gold mine we have. We have natural gas. We have water. We have a very large population of skilled workers that are moving out of state. So we need help.
The Farm Show, with all its livestock, farmers, food, and yes, politics, is open for visitors until Saturday. Katie Meyer in Harrisburg.
Finally this evening, Russia has been all over the news of late, but this evening, Philadelphians will be treated to a musical form from a little-known corner of that country. Alosh is an ensemble of overtone singers from Tuva. It's a traditional style where a singer produces a fundamental pitch and at the same time also sings one or more pitches over that. The Tuvans aren't exactly adding an extra note. Rather, they remove most of the overtones that normally exist in a single musical note. Sean Quirk, the American manager of Alosh, explains.
What a Tuvan does is they're actually able to manipulate the muscles in their throat and in their chest and the way they make sound to remove most of those overtone notes that were always there, but we didn't hear them because they're blended together. And what they have is they just leave a couple notes. And so then when you have these couple notes standing out, all of a sudden you get these amazing timbres.
You can hear those overtones this evening when the Alosh Ensemble gives a free concert at the Rotunda in West Philadelphia. That's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Benyakov, Kimberly Haas, Ty Johnson, and Brett Rader. Find us on iTunes or listen back at newsworks.org. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dave Heller for NewsWorks Tonight.